This week on Barbell Shrug, we're going to talk about getting hurt while doing MMA, weightlifting, and how to prevent it.
What's up, guys? This is CTP, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. Make sure you check out our video versions of all these podcasts on our website, fitter.tv. On all of our video versions, we include our Technique Wad, which is our series of technique instruction videos for CrossFitters, free previews of some of the seminars we put out, and then sometimes come out of the studio and have special video segments such as cooking in the kitchen with Brandy that one time and out in the pool with Lucas, and who knows what the next thing we'll do is. So make sure you check out our website, fitter.tv, and watch the videos as well.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletso here with Doug Larson and our guests, Dave Ferguson and Corey Lones.
Hello.
Let's get a little history on both of you guys. We're going to try to talk a little about injuries today. And I think everyone in this room has had quite a few injuries.
Two of the most injury-prone guys I know, right here.
That's true.
This is true.
We got Dave Ferguson. You own Memphis BJJ. You want to give us a little bit of history and things you've been injured on and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Well, history-wise, as far as the gym goes, we've been in business 9 years actually this month. Started in a basement in Midtown. Just as more of a hobby, having fun doing it with all my friends and competitors, and it's kind of turned into a business.
And just to clarify, this is a MMA gym.
Yeah, mixed martial arts gym. We do a lot of different things there. We do mixed martial arts, obviously, judo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, submission wrestling, boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing. We have kids classes also, fitness kickboxing as well. So we do a wide variety of martial arts and fitness classes.
Very cool.
Yep.
And what about your training history?
My training history. Well, I started off training in March of 96 with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Shortly thereafter, I started training Muay Thai kickboxing. I started to compete in mixed martial arts in late 97 and turned professional in 99 and fought a bunch all over. I've had a passion for martial arts for a long, long time, but I never really found the martial art that really fit me until I found Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And that's where my real passion came in for martial arts, was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And now I'm very blessed to be able to do what I love doing daily.
Very cool.
So how'd you find out about it? I mean, you kind of jumped on the Jiu-Jitsu bandwagon before it was very mainstream like it is today.
Yeah. Before it was a bandwagon.
That's right. Yeah. You know, everyone knows they might not know, all the details of it, but they've heard of Jiu-Jitsu, even if you're just a lay person. Like my mom, even if I didn't do Jiu-Jitsu, probably still would hear about Jiu-Jitsu in the media or just from random people or on Facebook or what have you, but you jumped in way before it was popular.
Yeah, I did. It's funny. I guess it goes back to being a teenager. When I was a teenager, a buddy of mine's grandfather used to box in the Army, and so he had a heavy bag in his garage and speed bag and stuff, and so we used to work out a little bit, and he would teach us a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Never competed in boxing, but I was always fascinated by fighting and boxing, and truth be told, in high school, I fought a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And because I was just a rough, stupid kid,
Okay.
So I've always been fascinated with fighting and kind of what works in fighting. Mm. And, I remember in high school, I would wrestle with some of the wrestlers, and I thought, man, they're really good. And I would knock around with some boxers, and man, they're really good. Mm. Okay, so what's the perfect combination here? Well, right after high school, the UFC came out. Okay. And of course, I'm dating myself there. I graduated in 93. All right. So UFC came out, and a friend of mine actually said, hey, you've got to come check this out, man. Mm-hmm. There is this show where these guys get in a cage from all different martial arts backgrounds, and they fight each other with no rules, no gloves. They can do anything. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Is it pro wrestling? He's like, no, man, you got to see this.
Yeah.
I'm going to order it on pay-per-view. Come over and see this. Because he had ordered the first three, all right? And he had talked about them a little bit, but when it was UFC 4, he's like, dude, you've got to come see this. And the guy who keeps winning is this little skinny guy. He's like this Mexican guy who wears a bathrobe, and he's making these guys quit. And I'm like, I've got to see what he's talking about. So I went over to his house, and sure enough, Hoist Gracie, who we know now was the first Ultimate Fighting Champion, he was submitting these bigger, stronger guys using technique. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is unbelievable. Because I always thought the toughest guy, the toughest fighter was the biggest guy, the strongest guy, the most athletic guy, the guy that hit the hardest. Mm-hmm. That was the guy that won fights. not some little skinny Brazilian guy in a gi wrestling and grappling with somebody and making them tap. So it was fascinating. And like anybody, I think the first time anybody ever saw that, they were fascinated by it.
Sure.
So, of course, this is back in, you know, 94 when I first saw it. And then for the next year, year and a half, I kind of searched out Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I wanted to learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, okay? But, of course, nobody taught Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It was so rare. The only places in the United States where it was taught was in New York City with Henzo Gracie. He had a school up there then. And then the Gracie Academy in Torrance, California. Okay. So I didn't know that. So I called. I remember looking in the phone book. Okay. This is prior to Googling, you know, stuff. Look in the phone book.
The yellow pages.
Yeah, right. That's exactly. Right. That's yellow pages. Yep. I looked in the yellow pages on my kitchen counter, and I literally sat there all day calling every martial arts school going, hey, I want to learn jiu-jitsu. Now, I didn't know one jiu-jitsu from another, okay?
Right.
Now I know there's all kinds of different jiu-jitsus. There's Aikido jiu-jitsu is a form of Aikido and all kinds of different things like that. So I called all these places. I finally found this one Taekwondo school, okay, where the guy said, yeah, we got this guy on Saturdays that comes in and teaches Aikido jiu-jitsu. You should come check it out. Oh, I found it.
I found it.
Thank goodness. It was like the last one I called, you know? And so I went by and I did that class for about 2 or 3 months every Saturday, and I came to find out real quick it wasn't what I was looking for because it was just a bunch of Aikido throws. No disrespect to Aikido, but it wasn't what I was looking for. And so I kind of got disheartened, and but I was still very interested. So I remember always looking in like martial arts magazines. I'd go to Kroger or something like that, and I'd stop and I'd look at Black Belt Magazine. And then one day I picked up a Black Belt Magazine and I saw a little quarter page ad in there for the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Basic Video Series. $250. Order them off, cut it out, send a check in, order off this video series. And I said, Eureka, I found it. Eureka, all right? So I ordered off of this videotape series. The videotape series came in the mail.
This is VHS.
VHS, yep, VHS. And it was a whole series of the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Basics, which was with Hoist and Horion. And when I saw Hoist, I said, this is legit. Okay, this is what I was looking for. Right. So then when it came in the mail, and the way I started training was actually real jiu-jitsu was on my living room floor in my apartment with my little brother. All right, my little brother was a lot younger than me. He was 16, 17. And I used to get him to come over by promising he and his buddies I'd buy them beer. That's how I got to train. And because after a while, my brother's like, man, I don't want to do this anymore. He didn't like it.
Sure.
I don't want to get choked and armbar and all that. I said, look, man, I'll buy y'all a 12-pack. All right, man, I'll come on over. So that's how I started training. And so I started learning all these techniques. Well, anyway, to make a long story not so long, I finally found a gym, a martial arts school, where they started doing the same thing. They were training off the video series. Of course, there weren't any schools or information out there. You couldn't go to YouTube and find techniques.
Right.
So I started training with those guys, and that was Chad Chilcutt School. And there was about four or five of us that trained together in a small group for about a year, and more people started coming and adding on to the group, and I guess the rest is history. So that's how I got started.
Very cool.
Yep.
I didn't know most of that.
Yeah. Me neither.
Yeah.
Yep. But so... What got you starting your own facility? Like, at what point was that? Like, how long were you training before you were like, well, I want to start my own thing?
Yeah, well, you know, I was very interested in mixed martial arts. My interest from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu went from wanting to do just Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to, hey, I want to fight, which I knew I needed to add striking to my, you know, curriculum. So I started going over to Jeff Mullen's school, which he was, you know, world-renowned kickboxer, great kickboxer, and started learning Muay Thai. I was still teaching at another school, which was Chad's school. And I had been asking Chad for a long time to invest in some equipment for Muay Thai kickboxing because I wanted to be able to start bringing some guys up. I needed training partners, that sort of thing. Because I would find myself like running from Chad's school and driving as fast as I could over to Jeff's so I could get my sparring and Muay Thai in. Okay. Well, I wanted to be able to stay in just one place and do it and develop guys myself, you know? Well, not to say anything bad about Chad. I mean, Chad's a great guy, and I appreciate everything he's ever done for me, but he just wasn't in the point where he was going to invest in the equipment needed to properly train Muay Thai kickboxing or bring people in or whatever. So, you know, I was very much into mixed martial arts, and I was fighting then. I had actually just came back from Denmark, which is another story as well. I lived over there and trained Muay Thai extensively over there, got to fight over there. When I came back, I didn't want all this to go to waste. I learned so much great Muay Thai. I loved mixed martial arts. I had guys actually who wanted to do mixed martial arts, but it's hard to kind of train guys just a pair of mitts. You know what I mean? You need to have a facility set up for that kind of training. So at that point, Joel Gingery and Mike Ostrowski, he and the three of us talked about it a lot. Hey, we need to really do something. you know. And not just the Muay Thai aspect, but we also were moving from place to place. We went from Wynwood Sportsplex to Bartlett Recreation Center. So we were moving all the time. So what happened, we started losing a lot of training partners too. Mm-hmm. Because let's say a guy stays out for a couple of months, he's not training, but he wants to come back to training. If you've moved somewhere and they can't find you, mm-hmm. then you've just lost a training partner. Mm-hmm. All right. And that happened repeatedly. So we said, we need a place that's stable, a place where we can grow, a place where we can keep training partners. And so we made the decision, let's start looking for a place to open up a school. Mm-hmm. And it made sense to call it Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu because Mike was a judo black belt. You know, obviously Joel and I were into jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a poor, just fresh out of college student, and so I had no money for a lease or anything like that. So we found a basement below a karate school at Poplar and Highland, and that's how we started. Mm-hmm. We just threw a few mats on the floor, started in this basement, no marketing, no advertising, no visibility, nothing, and yeah, the rest is history, man.
Cool.
Yep.
So this is a strength conditioning podcast for the most part.
Yep.
Did you guys do any strength training? Was that really on your mind at all as far as fighters, you know, 20 years ago, or did you feel like it was just technique and you didn't have to worry about being strong anymore? Or do you guys still lift weights?
No, man. You know, back then, I thought it was just technique because mm-hmm. that was the mantra back then. You got to think, mm-hmm. the early days of mixed martial arts, you know, here is Hoist Gracie, this skinny guy who obviously doesn't do a whole lot of strength and conditioning, or didn't back then, mm-hmm. beating all these big, strong, tough guys. And the mantra was technique, technique, technique. And this is why Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu became such an interesting thing for a lot of the average person out there who maybe is not athletic, or the person who doesn't think they can be tough or whatever. They see this and they go, you know what? I can be tough too. I can learn this stuff and learn to defend myself properly because look, he did it. Okay. And so that was the whole thing, was you don't have to do all the strength and conditioning and this and that and or be on steroids or whatever the case to be an effective fighter mm-hmm. or be able to effectively defend yourself. And so back then, no. I mean, nobody really was big into strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. But what you started to see happen in the sport of mixed martial arts as it evolved, mm-hmm. it's a competitive sport like other competitive sports, and you're always looking for an edge, right? So a lot of the smart guys, which actually it was kind of pushed by the American competitors more than other competitors in Brazil or something like that. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's start adding strength and conditioning to what we're currently doing, mm-hmm. all right, in addition to adding other martial arts, because it used to be where it was just pureness. You're a purist. You're a pure wrestler, got in there and fought. Pure boxer, pure Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy. So a lot of guys started to add not just martial arts, but strength and conditioning. And that's when you started to see the athlete start to win fights. Mm-hmm. They could weather the storm. Mm-hmm. They were conditioned enough to make it past the first or second round, mm-hmm. and they started to win fights. So now you see, as the sport has evolved, strength and conditioning is so important, if not one of the most important things involved in the sport of mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. This is the evolution. But yeah, to answer your question, back in the day, 15, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. No. You could be a guy off the street and come in and learn techniques and train your techniques, and you could do well. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the game's different now.
Mm-hmm. I had a guy last night talking to me saying originally he just wanted to fight, and he's talking about his very first fight ever. This is hard. And he said he went out there against a kickboxer and was like, I'm just going to crush this guy. And he said it went great for like the first minute. And then after that, having no conditioning background for fighting at all, thinking that he was just going to knock the guy out in the first round, after like 1 minute was just like, okay, I don't want to be out here anymore. And then he said that kickboxer started just peppering him with a bunch of jabs over and over
again.
That's
a horrible spot to be in too, man.
Way too tired.
Hey, you
want
to talk about getting in touch with your fears? Try being like dead tired and the guy's in your face with punches. That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he got kicked like right below the sternum where he couldn't breathe at all and fell on the ground and was just like, I'm done. Not doing this anymore. Maybe I should get in shape.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And he has since then. Yeah. But he learned it the hard way the first time.
Well, you know, strength and conditioning for all sports is important. I mean, obviously, it's super important. But in mixed martial arts, I think it's even more important than other sports, because you're not just going out there and competing and, oh, I lost a game of tennis, or, oh, I lost a game of baseball or whatever. You're getting your ass kicked in front of all right. your friends and family. You're getting your ass kicked. You know, that is an emotional gut check right there, you know. So yeah, strength and conditioning definitely is very, very important for it, you know.
Don't leave anything on the table. There's no point to like, oh, I don't need to do that over there. Because if you do, you get your ass kicked.
Get your ass kicked, yeah.
Not cool.
Is this a PG podcast, or can I say that?
You can say that.
Oh, no, okay. You can totally say that.
All right.
Yeah, there's the explicit label on iTunes. We're never going to get that off.
Yeah.
Corey, we all used to weightlift together. That's how we met. We met at in the basement of the field house.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. University of Memphis.
You got her. Yep. So,
the second most accident prone guy in the room.
Yeah, I think my nickname weightlifting could have been kamikaze, just the way I'd throw myself under bars that I probably had no business trying to catch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll give my background a little bit. Kind of always grew up playing a bunch of different sports. Never played any sports really at a really high competitive level. Hockey was probably the closest. Played some junior hockey in college and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was like 13 years old, just kind of started training a lot. You know, went to a yard sale and bought, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's modern, you know, Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding. Yeah. Kind of where I started. It got me interested in training. But never, you know, really knew what I was doing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But eventually realized that it was something that I was interested in enough to pursue it as a career for a while. Mm-hmm. So I actually got my undergrad in kinesiology with a focus in, you know, exercise science and exercise physiology. And then that's where I met you guys. Mm-hmm. I went down to Memphis and did my master's in exercise, well, human movement science, I guess, mm-hmm. some biomechanics, some physiology, and then actually parlayed it more into kind of a clinical type of PhD, but still in that rehab exercise area at Washington University. So I got my PhD in human movement science again, mm-hmm. and actually have kind of transitioned away from this field from a career perspective, but certainly kind of still at heart consider myself an exercise scientist, someone who still likes to practice it. Definitely try to, you know, stay in shape as much as I can and mm-hmm. Be involved, you know, with you guys. And
you're still competing weightlifting now, right?
So I am, yeah. Was away from it for 5 years due to some injuries and et cetera. Doing a PhD isn't very conducive to training 2 hours a day. But yeah, recently, you know, with a new job, got some time and kind of got the spark again to start training, feeling good after, you know, getting over some of those injuries. Mm-hmm. And actually had my first meet last week and it went well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What'd you total?
205. Mm-hmm. Kilograms. So it's a place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the breakdown there? What did you snatch and what did you clean?
I snatched 94, missed 98. And then I cleaned and jerked 111, which was far from what I could clean. Actually, it was really funny. Because of the shoulder injuries that I've been having recently, that's about all I can jerk right now, mm-hmm. but I can clean quite a bit more. So I hit 111 on my second clean and jerk. Mm-hmm. My coach is like, why don't you just walk up there and just clean 130 and just drop it? He goes, because I know you can clean it. Yeah. So that's what I totaled last week.
So you snatched 94, which is 207, and then you clean and jerked 111, which is 244.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
For those of you that don't think in kilos.
I'm terrible about thinking in pounds now, actually, just with that weightlifting, you know, background. Yeah. You're always doing kilos, at least in our gym anyway. So
I prefer kilos too, but if you're running a regular gym, most of your clients do not want to think in kilos. It's just a hassle.
We bought kilos originally for CrossFit Memphis.
Yeah,
like when we opened up the gym originally, I remember people were just extremely confused.
Yeah,
it's like there was five of us that were like, yeah, whatever, that makes total sense. And then everyone that I started coaching, it was like, they just got so confused. I was like, all right, we'll just put those in the corner and buy a bunch of pounds.
Well, yeah, if you go, I mean.
We didn't put them in the corner, though. We bought pounds plates, and then we had pounds and kilos plates, and then it was worse.
Yeah, there was a transition. they ended up in the corner eventually. Yep. Yeah.
But it's kind of fun when you are used to training in kilos, and you look at colors, and then you put two greens on, which you think is 22 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then it's actually more. So when I was down training a while ago, I was just going by colors, putting greens and yellows and blues and reds on.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand why I couldn't snatch this weight that I was trying to snatch. Finally, I hit it. I'm like, gee, man, I'm just really slow today. And I got thinking, I'm like, wait, that's like 8 pounds more than I thought it was. So it was actually a PR that day, and I didn't even know it until I finally hit it. But anyway.
Solid.
Yeah.
So what injuries did you have that kept you out of the game for a while?
actually, was pretty injury-free until when I was weightlifting at University of Memphis. Mm-hmm. We had been competing, I think, for about a year or so. And then, you know, I played hockey my entire life, had a couple of nicks and cuts and a couple of stitches here and there. But I think I missed a total of maybe 5 games my entire life.
Yeah.
And then playing rec league hockey, went feet first into the boards, mm-hmm. Broke my fibula and tore the deltoid ligaments in my ankle. Mm-hmm. Had to have a couple of surgeries, a couple of pins put through my ankle. So I actually was probably the strongest I've ever been at that point in my life. And then all of a sudden I have to wear a boot for 5 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, lost a lot of strength, obviously lost a lot of muscle mass. But it was kind of neat, from another perspective, because I'd never done any type of gymnastics work. So I think I was saying to you last night, actually, that was when I started actually doing, you know, muscle ups, doing some ring work, doing some, you know, parallel bar type of stuff. And that was actually really fun to do a type of training that I've never done before. So that was probably, that's the biggest injury I've had. Along with that, which I wouldn't consider it an injury, but it was actually diagnosed with arthritis, a form of psoriatic arthritis, which at the time it presented in really actually almost immobilizing pain in my sacral iliac joint, where there was a while as, I was a 23-year-old, I couldn't get out of bed for like 10 minutes in the morning. Went to a lot of, you know, physical therapy, chiropractors, et cetera.
For those people that don't know what a sacroiliac joint is,
The sacroiliac joint is where your sacrum, which is basically the bottom of your spine, is right below your bottom vertebrae, attaches to your pelvis. It's a joint that really doesn't move a whole lot.
So point to it.
Oh.
It's like right there.
Right here. Right above your buttocks.
There you go.
Pretty much. Yeah, you can feel it. There's a little, you know, bony prominence there. So it's not a joint that articulates a whole lot, but it's very load bearing. I mean, that's where your legs attach to your spine. Basically, that's the joint that, you know, brings those two body parts together.
Yeah.
Which are pretty important body parts.
Sure.
So actually it took a while for us to finally get me to a point where we knew what it was. So I went to a rheumatologist, got diagnosed with it. Actually went on a medication, which is an anti-inflammatory medication. Phenomenal. So I, you know, because of the ankle injury and that, I actually didn't lift weights or do any training for about 2 years at all, just because it wasn't, wasn't motivated whatsoever to do it. It just hurt all the time. So got that taken care of.
You didn't even bench press on occasion. Like, you didn't do anything?
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, because I lost so much strength, it was almost like just demoralizing to even go in a gym and just like try to do something, because you're not even remotely close to where you used to be. And then, you know, I was doing the PhD at the time, a lot of excuses. You know, so, but yeah, finally got that rehabbed. And you know, since then it's been nice. It's kind of been refreshing to feel, you know, I felt like a 50-year-old man there for a little while and actually back feeling, you know, feeling pretty good and able to train again. Now
it's nasty.
Yeah. Now I get some shoulder issues, which we could talk about as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you had a pretty nasty back injury that put you out for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it probably still isn't what it used to be. Talk a little bit about that. What happened to your back?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've always was pretty lucky as a competitor when I was fighting and competing in grandpa competitions and stuff and Muay Thai. I never really suffered any serious injuries. There was nothing that just like happened. I tore my pec one time, and but nothing too serious, right?
Yeah.
But over time, my back started to hurt a little bit, and I didn't really know what it was. I was just like, oh, just some muscles are kind of whatever. So I went to a massage therapist, and I would get sports massages, and that felt really great, but my back still hurt. Then I started going to a chiropractor, and he'd crack me up and all fine and good. It releases the endorphins. You feel good afterwards. And, but my back still hurt, but I continued to compete and I continued to train. And over time it just got worse and worse. And, you know, I was just, I will say this, it's taught me a huge lesson. It's a lesson that I share with a lot of people. If you start to have back pain, take it serious. Don't think that it's going to go away, because it just gets worse. Because in my case, what it was, eventually came to find out, was I had a disc issue. All right. And it had gotten so bad, I let it go so long, it no longer was just bulging, but it had ruptured also. And when it ruptured is when I had just debilitating pain. Like, I just had to stop training right then and there. And it was just really, really bad. I mean, I had a hard time walking too far. It was sitting right on the sciatic nerve. And I of course went to a doctor, and they of course do the whole contingent, you know, what they want you to do. I got a local shot, and hey, here's some physical therapy. And I tried that, and it still was just horrible pain. And and I think they knew that too. I mean, it had ruptured. They were gonna have to do something. So I basically elected to get what's called a discectomy, where they go in and they fix the disc. I don't know if y'all have heard of that procedure before, but at the time when I got it done, it was fairly new. And it was good that I didn't have to get fused. And the reason I didn't want to get fused is because I wanted to get back to competing again. And I wanted to have complete mobility still, you know. So they did this this operation, and you know, I felt a lot better afterwards. I had to do a lot of physical therapy, But I've never been the same since. I still have back pain.
Yeah.
And a lot of different theories, you know, I've heard, oh, well, it's just some scar tissue. But, you know, it's been 4.5 years since my surgery. Mm-hmm. So I would think that the scar tissue would dissipate by now. But I still have a little bit of back pain, but not so bad that I can't, you know, get back to training. Mm-hmm. So I'm currently getting back in shape now. I've dropped about 15 pounds. I feel good about that here lately. And I'm about to actually ramp my train up a lot next week. I want to go to Denmark and start really trying to push it hard. Yeah, this will be my first time really pushing it hard and sparring and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I want to see how my back's going to do. I think it's going to do pretty well. I feel pretty confident about it.
Do better with kickboxing than it does with grappling?
Yes. Yeah, it does a lot better. Mm-hmm. Because with grappling, and actually I think that jiu-jitsu is, I don't want to blame it on jiu-jitsu, but I think that jiu-jitsu was the big cause of my back pain. Mm-hmm. But I would say, again, I don't want to put all the blame on jiu-jitsu. It's just I didn't properly condition myself for training.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, I wasn't doing a lot of specific core work and stuff like that I should have done, or strengthening my back in addition to my training. So my core was weak, relative to the work I was doing and the training I was doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in jiu-jitsu, you get folded up in all kinds of different positions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I know tons of guys who have done jiu-jitsu for years who complain about their backs. Mm-hmm. Imagine that, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I take this as a lesson, and I tell all the young guys now, hey, you need to really be doing a lot of core work. You need to really be strong in your core, because you can do jiu-jitsu all you want, but you're going to pay the price later if you don't get strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the truth of the matter.
I think you bring up a good point, too. You talked about, like, if your back's bothering you, don't take it lightly.
Yeah.
What I want to say about that is that something is going on, and usually, like, back pain is not due to your back is hurt. It's usually symptomatic of something else going on. So if you feel back pain, there's probably something else going on that's causing that. A lot of times people are like, oh, my back is hurting. How can I stretch my back? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, don't stretch your
back. Yeah, you're going to make it worse.
Yeah, like, you know, there's probably even, Doug can talk more about this than me, but there's mobility issues a lot of times. You may feel like you're really flexible. Like, I know that I've got really good flexibility on external rotation of my hips.
Mm-hmm.
But like but my internal rotation is not fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, I'll be squatting. Like once every 6 months, I'll get some really bad back pain. I know exactly why. It's because I have bad internal rotation in my hips.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that I'm going to spot. Like, you're not going to like look at someone and go, oh, you got bad internal rotation in your hips. Like, that's something you're going to have to like test. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like my one of my issues. And it causes back pain. So a lot of times, you know, if you get back pain, it's not because a lot of times it's not like, oh, your back, there's just something wrong with your back. It might be something else wrong in your body that has nothing to do with your back. Mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of times people wait for their back to get better. They get back into training and it gets hurt again because they didn't fix what was causing the back problem.
Yeah. When you have an issue on part of your body, oftentimes that's not where the pain is going to develop. It's actually the weak link is going to take on, you know, that you're be more mobile than it should be because another part of your body isn't as mobile, and oftentimes that's your back, you know.
You know, I learned a lot from talking to Doug, you know, after my back problem stuff. You know, one thing that Doug impressed upon me, and I thank you for it a lot, man, and you might not realize it, but you talked to me a lot about how all the muscles that tie in, you know, the glutes, the hamstrings, all these kind of things have to be strengthened, and you need to be mobile and flexible in all these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because my thinking was always prior to that, it's localized. It's the back. It's a lower back. But that's just part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything else that ties into it, you know, that really makes a big difference. And I tell people that all the time who might be having some issues or trouble. Like Nathan Pang had some back. I said, man, you need to strengthen your glutes and your hamstrings. I don't know if he came and saw you, but I told him to go see you or talk to you.
I haven't talked to him, no.
Yeah, well, you know.
Calling you out, Nathan.
Calling you out right now. Go see Doug. Yeah, but anyway, you know, it's one of those things where, man, education is a big thing, you know. Educating these guys and letting them know. Because you know, a lot of the young guys, it's like any of us, until we have pain, we don't take the necessary steps to prevent it in the future. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we did stuff to prevent it on the front end,
sure,
we wouldn't have any issues.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm young. I'm tough.
I never do any mobility work until I get hurt. Shit, I should be doing more stretching during my warm-ups or, you know, after I work out. You know, I need to really focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I'll like focus on it until I start feeling good, and I'll focus for a couple more weeks and then trails off. So
yeah, the comment you made about stretching your low back, Yeah, I get that one. I get that all the time. People have a little bit of back issue, and it's intuitive to think, well, maybe I need to stretch more because more flexibility, you know, people tend to accept that means that you're less likely to get hurt in the future. But with your low back, for the most part, getting too much low back range of motion is what causes injury, which is why jiu-jitsu is so much more problematic than something like Muay Thai, because you're not getting max flexion or max extension of your low back because you're, for the most part, just standing the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, and oftentimes you're getting forced into those positions too.
Sure.
With weight being stacked on top of you, and you know what I mean? That's
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get someone's trying to pass your guard and they're folding your hips all the way into your face. Yeah. And you're just all crumbled over.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably when people get the majority of their problems. And every time I'm in that position, I'm like, oh shit, like I hope I don't fucking throw my back out right now.
Well, you know what Joel told me is, you know, and I know that's where the problem was for me, because again, I was not strong in my core, and the kind of guard that I played, if I was on my back, I played more of an open guard. Mm-hmm. That was the kind of guard I played, was an open guard, which sometimes you can get stacked like that, you know? Mm-hmm. Where Joel told me is, look, man, when you get back to training jiu-jitsu, you need to change your game up completely. Mm-hmm. Don't ever play open guard. Better let the guy just pass than get stacked up like that and risk injury again.
Yeah.
So, you know, Joel's been talking to me about, you know, playing more half guard. When I get back to it, play more half, play on my side. Play my side more. Yeah. Don't play here where my legs can get, you know, all the way to my face, you know,
I think
basically.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to, when I do decide to get back to jiu-jitsu, which that day is going to come, I'm going to just completely retool my game in jiu-jitsu, you know, to prevent injury.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could also look at your mobility. The more range of motion you can get out of your hips and out of your upper back, the less your lower back, the kind of the joint that's sandwiched in between, has to move. So if you can get more range of motion above and below, then right in between can stay more stable.
Okay.
Which, so if you do get stacked, you just your lumbar spine will get
instead of all the pressure less. Being in one place. You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With slipping a disc, you know, you have two discs sitting on top of each other like this, and then usually what happens is when your back goes into flexion, it pushes all pressure on one side and it squeezes that center piece out. And so if you get stacked and it just goes like that instead of like this, then the pressure is still relatively even at that disc. It's when the two ends get put together by rounding your back a lot that causes the problem.
That makes perfect sense.
So if you get more range of motion out of your hips and they won't get to end range as soon, then your back won't get pulled into that position where the two sides come together.
That makes perfect sense.
It's kind of hard to demo without like getting on the ground and showing it.
Right.
But the more range of motion you get out of your hips, the better.
Okay.
So that's why guys like BJ Penn, everyone always talks about his crazy hip mobility because he can do all kinds of great stuff. But that's also probably why he doesn't have any back issues. I don't know if he does or not. I'm totally projecting. But but the more flexible your hips are, the better.
Okay. Well,
so we can test all that, though.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's great because you talked to me the other day about how your main focus right now, what you really like to study on is training specifically for mixed martial arts, physical training or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you say you've been writing some stuff and putting some stuff down, I guess, about it. And
yeah, I put together a whole MMA program. I did a presentation years ago that we recorded, and then I put together some programs, and we haven't actually posted that online. But me and Alex, one of your coaches, and Tyler, another one of your coaches, have been using that program lately with great results. And actually Hannah's been training with us too, and she's gotten a lot stronger over the last couple months.
Good. And is flexibility and mobility a big part of that program as well?
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot of stretching while they're there, but it's all full range of motion type stuff. And if I ever see them get to end range and they start to move their low back, for example, then with them, for the most part, I just change the movement so they're going through a full range of motion, but they're not destabilizing their stable joints like their back.
Right.
Like Hannah can't front squat very well. You know, she ends up pitching over and dropping her elbows down, and that hurts her wrist. So we just modified it and gave her a different type of squat. And so I just kind of switched the movements in and out for each one of their individual body types or range of motion issues. And then if they have any flexibility issues, then you know they have a few stretches, but like Alex can't. Alex, if you put Alex on the wall, he can't touch his elbows to the wall. He's like this.
Really?
Like he has like no range of motion into flexion or external rotation.
Oh my goodness.
He like can't touch his hands to the wall at all. So he's got some issues there that we've been working on pretty aggressively.
So he could end up having what, shoulder issues, I guess, or something like that. If it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
Like he can't back squat or press a bar overhead correctly. Like he can't grab the bar like behind his back like that, and he can't press overhead because he gets to here. Alex's shoulders are super immobile.
Wow.
So that's going to cause him shoulder issues down the line, or it's going to cause him low back issues down the line. So
low back issues, okay.
Yeah, if you can't reach overhead, if you can only get to here, and uh-huh. you can't bring your arms back like that to do like an overhead press, for example.
Let me test myself real quick.
Yeah.
Am I good? I'm okay?
Yeah. You probably are fine, really, actually.
Okay.
But Alex will get to here, and then he'll hyperextend his low back in order to get his arm vertical. And then a lot of guys get hyperextension injuries as a result, kind of the opposite of what you had.
So that's interesting to know that something like that can affect the lower back so much.
Yeah, it's all compensation for a lack of mobility.
What's funny is like everybody at some point, it sounds like, has lower back pain. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, what's one of your issues? Oh, low back pain. It's like it's over and over and over again. And a lot of times it's something different for, you know, different people. You know, one person it's shoulders, next person it's hips. Next person, it could be ankles.
You know, one thing that I keep thinking about is, like, how do we, I guess, teach these guys that are coming up now about this kind of stuff and get them to, number one, believe it. Number two, do it, you know, I mean, and stick with it. I mean, I'd love to see, the dream of mine would be, because of my experiences, to see a lot of these young guys coming up, whether they be some of our MMA fighters or jiu-jitsu guys or whatever, start to incorporate this into their regular routine as a prevention before they get injured. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we go forward with that and make it to where it's easy for them to understand? Mm-hmm. It's something that's part of the program. Just like, you know, when you get on the mat and do our warm-ups, hey, shrimp drills, we're going to do these rolls, you know, blah, 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 whatever it is, armbar drills. Hey, this is one of the drills. Is this exercise for this reason? Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to see that happen, you know. That would be great.
Convincing late teens, early 20s guys.
Good luck, right?
You want to fight.
That's right. Hey, you're going to need to do this little mobility drill here. Yeah. What? I want to punch somebody in the face.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you learn, you know, through your own mistakes after a while. And I mean, even to this day, I hate doing any mobility stuff. But I do it because, like, I now know after a few injuries, like, it catches up with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes a long time to learn that lesson. And so whether it's actually making them do it, I don't know what it'll take, but it's, you know, it's tough because I can relate. That's where I was. But, you know, now listening, even something just popped in my head now when you were talking about how your shoulder can affect your back.
Yeah.
Now that I've had these back issues, I've been pretty cognizant of keeping up my mobility. And actually, that's why I'm kind of dedicated to continuing to weightlift, even though some people might say, you know, is that really the best sport you should be doing? But I actually think it's great because I've never been as mobile as I am when I'm weightlifting in terms of my hips. You know, I've always had terrible shoulder mobility, and as bad as it still is, I think it's better than it would be if I wasn't weightlifting.
Yeah.
But then, you know, with that bad shoulder mobility, you know, you were just talking about how, you know, it may transition to a back problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had pretty healthy back now that I've rehabbed it and got it back to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about that. You know, I've been having shoulder issues and rehabbing my shoulder lately for the sake of the shoulder issue. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing to consider, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you have what I was just talking about, like your overhead reach, range of motion, your shoulder flexion isn't as good as it needs to be if you want to be a competitive weightlifter.
Exactly.
We'll say that. It's not bad. It's not real bad. But if you're going to compete in that sport where you're overhead all the time, then you absolutely have to have more range of motion.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it is an issue because I am symptomatic, and it hasn't caused back issues. But I can see where it might, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Your biggest thing at the moment, we were talking about this yesterday, is that you lack internal rotation.
Yep.
At your shoulder, and so what happens in that case is if you're doing cleans where you're pulling up like this, and you can't get your hand this low, then you're going to roll your shoulder forward like that. You're going to destabilize your scapula. And then as a result, this bone here and the top of your upper arm are going to get really close together, and you're going to start smashing those tissues in between.
Yep.
And then you're going to end up with shoulder pain as a result.
As it happens.
And that's part of what's going on with your shoulder at the moment.
Yeah. But I could see if I don't, excuse me, if I don't rehab that, you know, start having some back issues and stuff. Because when you're overhead and you can't get your shoulders to that position, guess how you get there? Get into a little bit more extension in your low back, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and actually, I feel that sometimes if I actually hit a good jerk and get a good overhead position from a shoulder perspective, I feel it in my, you know, actually one of my sacroiliac joints will feel it because I'm actually probably doing a lot more lumbar extension than I really should be in that position, you know, to get my hands overhead in a position to actually catch a heavy bar.
Yeah.
So,
but that's you've been injured lately?
No. Wait. Psychologically.
Psychologically injured.
Emotionally.
Emotionally wounded.
That's right. Man, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I haven't had any injuries lately. And then I start, like, talking to someone. And it's like, I've had, like, three this year, you know.
You better knock on wood over there, man. Jeez.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I've probably been hurt a few times this year. It's like I'm just so used to being hurt all the time. It's just I'm always used to, like, working around injuries. Like, I don't even think about it. It's like it's normal to be injured or something.
I've got an off-the-wall question. And I don't know if it's even pertains, but I've heard before that nutrition can play a big role in injury. I don't mean from a standpoint of being healthy or whatever, but just like it can break down bone. It can, you know, hurt your muscles or your tissues or your connective joints or whatever. Mm-hmm. Having improper nutrition. Is that?
Oh, that's a really good, yeah? That's a really good point. Really good question. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to answer it today. No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, your nutrition and the amount of sleep you get are the two things that influence your recovery. Wow. From anything, whether it's intentional muscle breakdown that you did from training and you're just sore and you're trying to build muscle mass, or, you know, when you strain a muscle and you kind of just got a little tear in it and it hurts, you know, it still has to build that tissue back. And you do that by, you know, providing new tissue from which to build from, which is food. And if you don't have enough of that, then, you know, it's going to happen slower. So it's going to take longer to recover. And then, like I said, sleep's the other big one. If you're not getting enough sleep, which when you're sleeping, you're recovering at a faster rate than you would when you're up moving around. If you don't get enough food and you don't sleep enough, then yeah, it'll take a little bit longer. But as far as causing an injury, no, probably not. Like if you eat really, really, really bad as opposed to really, really, really good, if you're on the far ends of the spectrum, yeah. But for the most part, I really don't think about nutrition. Someone gets hurt, I'm not like, well, your diet's bad.
Well,
I bring it up.
One of the things I've heard before is like, oh, if you drink sodas, you know, it's going to break down your joints and bones and, you know, this kind of thing is making weaker and, you know.
There's phosphoric acid in a lot of sodas and that, you know, people talk about it leaching calcium out of your bones and stuff. Yeah. But if you just suck down tons of Coke all day long and you never do any strength training and your bone density is terrible,
then maybe,
you're an elderly woman, on and on and on, then maybe you could blame it on the soda, but I think that's an extreme case.
I think a lot of times people want to focus on that one little thing, and really what you want to look at is like total inflammation. So there's a lot of foods that cause inflammation, and there's foods that, you know, are anti-inflammatory, and I think everyone's familiar with foods that, you know, are anti-inflammatory as being healthy, right? So if you're eating a diet that causes a lot of inflammation, then you're gonna end up more injury prone because you aren't recovering as fast.
So if you have a previous injury, like myself, a back injury, I should probably
there's certain things
not eat foods that are inflammatory.
Right. So what can end up happening is if your body is not able to recover as fast and you keep on putting that stress on it, then it can make that injury happen sooner. Also, like, just as far as joint pain goes in general, like, there's a lot of stuff to show that just systemic inflammation will cause all your joints to be injured, more likely to be injured or hurt more. So things like taking anti-inflammatory fish oil, you know, just something as simple as that. People have reported, like, take fish oil. That's a nutrient, really. It's something that you could eat in your food, but you're going to put it in a pill instead. You take that and joints feel better and they're healthier and stuff like that. Hmm. And a lot of that is just lowering your entire systemic inflammation in the body. The other thing too is, like, there's certain things you can eat that are like gut irritants, so they can cause gut irritation. And what can happen there also is, like, gluten is one of these things for a lot of people. That's why kind of nutrition is different for everybody. Most people should probably be avoiding wheat at all costs because it has gluten, and most people are developing some kind of gluten intolerance. It causes gut irritation. Then all the really healthy food you eat, all the good food you eat, you're not really absorbing that into the body. So say most people, calcium is not the issue. You know, it's probably that they're just not loading their bones. Like, your body will adapt, but say you're eating a lot of stuff that causes gut irritation. You eat a lot of vegetables, say it has calcium, but you may not be absorbing that calcium because you have so much gut irritation. And so someone who's pounding wheat at every meal, they're eating bread, they're eating, you know, wheat pasta or something like that, they may not, they may be putting good nutrients in their mouth, but it's not getting into their body. And so that's another thing that causes, you know, and it's just all nutrition is for recovery. And so if you're putting things in your body that isn't good for recovery, then you'll get injured sooner. You just won't be able to train as hard as frequently either. You know, if you eat really well and get enough sleep, you can train really hard. That's why steroids work. They help people recover faster. Mm-hmm. It's not because they actually make you stronger. They just allow you to recover sooner so you can keep training. So, I mean, if steroids give you competitive edge, so does eating a really, really good food. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my general rule for people who want to recover faster and stuff like that and feel better is eat 1 gram of protein for every pound of body weight and at least 10 servings of vegetables a day. It's hard to eat the stuff that causes inflammation if you're doing that.
So. You're too full off the good food to worry about being hungry for bad food.
Yeah. If I'm eating 200 grams of protein a day from meat or eggs and I've eaten 10 servings of vegetables, I don't even want to eat the other stuff.
Because eating is a chore at that point.
Exactly. Maybe a beer, but you know, whatever.
There you go.
All right, let's take a quick break real quick. Mm-hmm. Watch the technique wad and we'll get back. Oop. All right. Welcome back, Barbell Shrug. First, I just want to give a shout out to Illy. That's the coffee we drink now.
I was like, who?
Good.
Yeah. So go to Amazon.com and buy some Illy coffee. I was drinking a bunch of Starbucks. Now Illy's where it's at. So, and then French press it. Don't ruin it.
With your
Don't ruin it with your drip coffee or your cream and sugar.
Get off your high horse.
Use your Barbell Shrug. You see?
That's right. Yeah. Go to the website. Buy a Barbell Shrug mug. Use that to drink your Illy coffee out of.
Like us.
Perfect.
At some point, we're going to have to get our own Barbell Shrug mugs.
We sell them
and we don't even have any to let, like during the show to drink out
of. We have
them. That
would
be nice.
Don't put them. Yeah. Not very good at washing dishes.
Me neither. So I use like all paper plates.
That is true for us too.
I do too.
We do the same thing.
Yep. Where it's at, man. I actively promote that in the upcoming nutrition seminar to use paper plates.
Listen,
paper
when bowls. Guests come over, we break out the plates,
right?
And glasses, but not at home with my wife and I. Sorry,
it's funny. I've actually never considered that, and it's a genius idea,
dude. It saves me so much time. Like paper plates, paper bowls, plastic forks and silverware. That's plasticware, I guess, is lifesaver.
He's been talking about this for years, and I just can't do it. Like I feel like I'm wasting, and that's just me.
Time is money, you know?
That's right.
Is money.
Yeah, but I don't think like rinsing my plate off and sticking it in the dishwasher is very hard.
Hey, but sometimes you have to scrub
a dishwasher.
My wife is doing it,
so that's probably why I don't.
That's
know.
Right. Now, I think there's a cost to anything that you do. Whether you're throwing away paper products or you're using more water or more power or whatever, like what by running dishwasher, there's a cost to everything.
Oh yeah.
And in this case, it's saving me a ton of time, and I'm not that worried about it. It's pretty cheap. Man, I save like a half an hour or an hour every day.
I know, like if I were to reason it out, it wouldn't matter.
Do they make disposable pots and pans?
I wish,
because that's where I spend most of my time cleaning
paper pots and pans. Yeah.
Well, if you get a really good pot and pan, it's easy to clean.
Yeah, exactly.
It just, you know, practically rinses out if you spend enough money on one.
But speaking of which, your nutrition seminar, so I'm going to give you a plug, starts tomorrow, right?
Well, it does. Well,
so it started this week, I guess.
It starts tomorrow, but this episode won't post for a few days. So it's probably already started if you're watching this episode. But yeah, it's going to be Monday through Thursday from noon until 1, 8 total sessions. So if you're watching this episode, you know, right when we posted it, it probably started a few days ago. So at a minimum, you can catch it next week. The dates are going to be October 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th, Monday through Thursday. And then again, the following week, it'll be the 22nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th from noon until 1. And that's totally free. We're going to sell that nutrition course for $200 on fitter.tv in the shop. So if you want to watch it for free for the very first time, it'll be from noon until 1 on those dates. So if you haven't opted in for that newsletter list yet, go right below the newsletter opt-in for the on the main page of fitter.tv, and there'll be a little banner ad that has some fruit and vegetables in the background. It'll say free nutrition course. Just click on that, and then you can put your name and email in. That way, before the next session, I'll send you the link so you can opt into the live webinar. and you can watch that product for free.
Yeah, I'm looking
as
forward
a one-time
to it.
Show.
Yeah, but yeah. I've blocked off noon to one on my calendar for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah,
to work. Yeah,
so good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm expecting a very large showing. We've had hundreds, if not thousands, of people opt in to watch that seminar. Right now, the software only holds 100 people. So if on the first day, if we just blow right past that 100 people, then we're going to have to upgrade to the next best option, which I think is 500 people.
Doug is famous.
About to be famous.
Look at that. Wow.
Deserves to be.
Deserves, yeah. Rightfully so. Yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome to come watch it too. I don't know. Did I send you an email telling you about it?
I think you did.
I want to say I did.
I think you did. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, Dad, tell the MMA guys about it, man.
I will.
Trying to get those guys to eat better and not get injured.
Hence what we're talking about right now. Man. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to remind Alex about it too.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Well, I'll be in Denmark all next week, but
that's right. That's right.
I can log in and check it out.
Excellent. All right, guys. I think we're gonna call it a day. Let's go around and promote our stuff.
There you go.
Doug already did it with his nutrition.
That was my plug. You got your gym?
Yeah, a little bit about it. Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu. You can check it out at memphisbjj.com. It's a fantastic school here in Memphis. A lot of great guys. We have world champions, Pan Am champions, professional mixed martial arts fighters, great fitness classes as well. Beautiful 24,000 square foot facility.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a great place to check out. Also, memphisfitnesskickboxing.com. Check that out as well. Mm-hmm. We've got some cool things in the works coming up very soon, which I won't announce here, but some very cool stuff coming up.
Okay.
In regards to that, yeah, that's pretty much about it, man.
I mean, really one of the most successful MMA gyms in the Mid-South, if not damn country. Very, very, very successful.
I appreciate that. We're getting there. Yeah. We're getting there. It's square footage wise, just it is the largest.
Yeah,
24,000 square feet, largest in the country in North America.
Yeah.
We want it to be the most prestigious one day, though, too. So we're working towards that goal. A lot of good people behind us, and great coaches, and great students, and one day I hope to reach that goal.
Yeah, really, really good coaches. Like, it's actually funny. Like I know these guys like on a personal basis, I've known them for years, and it's weird to think about them being world champions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they just seem like regular guys, but they just happen to be really, really good at this one thing.
It's crazy.
You know, grappling.
It's crazy. You know, and the guys are dedicated, man. And, you know, that's the great thing about our school. You know, we've got that competitive side where, you know, we go to the world championships and Pan Ams, and a lot of our guys travel the world and compete, and that's great. But I don't want people to get confused. You don't have to be a competitor to train at our gym. You don't have to compete. You can do it for fun, fitness, self-defense. It's a gym that's geared towards anybody of any fitness level, geared towards anybody of any competitive level or non-competitive. So it's really a place for just about anybody. But I will say this, you know, being around the top level competitors, even if you're doing it for just recreation, sort of inspires you to train harder and do more and really get into it more. So, you know, positive breeds positive, man, you know?
So no one's going to punch you in the face unless you ask them to.
Unless you ask them to, right. Yeah. And you don't have to ask them nicely. They'll do it, but...
They'll happily do it.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're in the Memphis area and you want to train some mixed martial arts or just get in shape, memphisbjj.com.
Thanks. And this has been a great experience, guys, by the way. Y'all have an awesome thing going here. Really do. And for those who are watching this, man, these guys are awesome. I've known Doug and Mike for a long, long time. And, man, they're selfless with their time. Anytime I ever have any questions, these guys about nutrition or working out or training or whatever, same for our guys at our gym. These guys always, you know, deliver. So awesome job, guys. Keep it up.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Absolutely.
You got anything you want to plug, Corey?
Nothing. No, I keep everything, you know, to myself. I don't share too many ideas.
You have the CoreyLonezBlog.com?
No, I don't.
Where you talk about life, love, and relationships?
Not yet, no. keep it very close. No, I got nothing.
All right.
Thanks for having me, though. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Go to fitter.tv, sign up for the newsletter so we can keep you updated on everything we got going on. And I'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, guys.